We are in the book of Genesis as we are studying the scriptures in 7 years. And we are closing to the end of the book of Genesis. There's only, I think after today, 3 more weeks that we are doing. And so we are here in the life of Joseph. We have considered all these other things ahead of time, but as we've considered the life of Joseph in this little mini-series, we've considered Joseph as the dreamer, saw his slanderous report, if you would, of his brothers, then being sent out by his dad after his dad had given him that fancy coat and his brothers hating him and sent him out to check on his brothers again. So the brothers took him and put him into a pit, sold him to the Midianite slave traders who took him down to Egypt, sold him as a slave to Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard. Last week we saw him as a slave and the fact that he served in Potiphar's house and that Potiphar received a blessing because of Joseph being in his house and that God had blessed Joseph as well for being a willing servant. You know, again, as I mentioned about Fanny Crosby, he could have taken his situation in life and said, I quit. But I had all these dreams, but I guess the dreams are coming to nothing. I don't know if you've ever had dreams and you felt like they weren't coming to fruition or whatever. He could have just quit, but he didn't. He worked hard. He served his master according to the flesh, not with eye service, but as with service that was unto the Lord. And I say that because when he was presented the temptation and the test by Potiphar's wife, he didn't say, you know, we may get caught. He didn't say, I can't do this great evil against your husband who is my master. But what he said was, how can I do this thing against God? This would be a sin against God. And so he recognized the fact that he wasn't just a servant, not just a slave of Potiphar. Rather, he was a slave and a servant of God. Now, I'd say Jesus, Lord Jesus Christ, but he didn't understand necessarily that part of it just yet. He might have understood that God was going to be the redemption for him, not know exactly how it was going to all happen. But we, having that knowledge today, we know that we've been bought with a price. And that we do not belong to ourselves, but rather we belong to God who owns us. And so we should, Romans chapter 6, not be servants and slaves to sin, but rather we should be servants and slaves of God. We should, in a righteousness, that's exactly right, seeking to serve Him. And so today we now slide into the story, because last week we saw that at the end of it that Joseph was taken upon the accusation of Potiphar's wife, that Joseph was taken and thrown into the jail and into the prison. And what we find out today in the very beginning is that the one who is over charge of that prison is Potiphar. Because Potiphar, being the captain of the guard, actually was over the prison as well. He's not the warden. He's not the one who's in charge of the prison. Rather, he had somebody under him. And so it was that person that we saw last week that also recognized the hand of God in the life of Joseph, such that he promoted Joseph even higher. And we discussed this a little bit last week, but as we look into this week and we see in chapter 40 that actually Potiphar was the one who was over this prison and that was actually within the house of Potiphar, it does lead to a little bit more of the inkling that maybe Potiphar sent a word to the warden about Joseph. Remember, we discussed whether Potiphar really expected that Joseph had done this atrocity or not, or whether he had a safe face with the community because of his wife. So again, we're not told that in the Word of God, what Potiphar's reaction and what his feelings were, but we see some indicators. But in chapter 40, Genesis chapter 40, hopefully you're there, I'm going to read through chapter 40. We read chapter 41 verses 1 to 46 for our Bible reading, but I'm going to read chapter 40 for the first part of the message here. And it says, beginning of verse 1, it came to pass after these things, and that was after the accusation and that Joseph was thrown into the prison. It says, it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king or Pharaoh of Egypt offended their lord, the Pharaoh of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody of the house of the captain of the guard, that's Potiphar, in the prison, in the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them. Isn't that interesting then? So we have the captain of the guard, who is who? Potiphar, okay? Specifically saying that he wanted the care of these two men to be given to Joseph, okay? And so we have the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them so that they were in custody for a while. Verse 5, then the butler and the baker of the Pharaoh of Egypt, who were confined in the prison had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of the Lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" And they said to him, "We each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." So Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please." Then the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "Behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was as though it had budded, its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and placed a cup into Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now, within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention to me of Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should have put me into the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and there were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head." So Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days." Now, wouldn't you like to be the baker this moment? He says, "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head," not lift up your head, but lift off your head from you, "and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you." Now, it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all of his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and the chief baker among his servants. Then he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Well, first let's talk about then these servants of Pharaoh. The first thing we see is their incarceration. They're thrown into prison. Why are they thrown into prison? Now, we're not told exactly, other than they offended the Pharaoh. But chances are, what probably happened was the Pharaoh got sick. He got sick. And Pharaoh is not supposed to get sick because he was a god on the earth. Not really, but that's what they would believe. And so clearly if God on earth got sick, somebody was responsible for it. Well, the butler was the one who put the liquid into his hand, and the baker was the one who was responsible for putting food into his hand. Does that make sense? Okay? And so if he got sick, it had to come from the food source. And so somebody is going to go down with it. Either the guy with the fluids or the guy with the solids, okay? And so both of them were thrown into prison. That was the butler and the baker. And so in their incarceration, they're put into the placement of Joseph, okay? Joseph had great authority over them at this moment. Think about it. Within prison, Joseph was placed in charge. And we see that authority again, as I mentioned a little earlier, came from Potiphar. Again, I just can't help wonder, you know, I mentioned this a little bit last week, you know, I don't know, but I can't still help wonder, you know, what was Potiphar's reaction to the whole situation? And we're going to see in a moment about Joseph's age here, but he served, in fact, let me just go here, and let's come back to this authority thing. Let's talk about Joseph's age at this moment, okay? Because we know that when he was 17 years old, back from what we saw in Genesis 37, he brought a slanderous report against his brothers. But then we're told that soon after that, he was sold as a slave to the Midianite traders and ultimately to Potiphar. I put down age 18 to 20. Now, I don't know how old he was. We're not really told, but it was soon after that. It wasn't a long time after that. We're told it was just a short time after that. So he could have still been 17, but I'm assuming that maybe, you know, he had a birthday or whatever in there. So 18 to 20 years old that he's there. The next age that we know of is what we're going to come up with later on in the message here, and that he was, verse 46 of chapter 41, that he was 30 years old when he appeared before Pharaoh. So what do I know? I know that for somewhere between 10 and 13 years, Joseph had been a what? Slave and a prisoner. Okay? Now what I do know, the last thing I know, is that we're told in the beginning of chapter 41 that it was 2 years after Joseph had interpreted the dreams for the butler and the baker that the butler remembered to tell Pharaoh. Okay? So, Joseph's authority. Okay? Again, I wonder now, coming back to that again, and we'll talk about the age in a moment and how that all this blends in here. But Potiphar, clearly, still has a good opinion of Joseph. Such that Potiphar, understand that when Pharaoh arrests the butler and the baker, and he throws him into prison, he puts him in charge of who? He put him in charge of the captain of the guard. Now, understand, who did the captain of the guard have charge of then? You could say that they were state criminals, okay? But he had two men in his charge who were what? Very influential in the life of Pharaoh. That's exactly right. At this very moment, they were what? Outcasts. They were prisoners. They were suspects. But what I think he knew was at any moment that these two people could be what? Reinstated. And now all of a sudden, you know, you don't want to get on the bad side of these ones who are with Pharaoh, because they are Pharaoh's special servants, right? And so Potiphar then, I'm sure, looked down into the prison. He didn't just hand them over to the warden and said, here, take care of these guys. Rather, Potiphar sidestepped, bypassed the keeper of the prison. Make sense? Because what do we see in chapter 39? Remember, when Joseph's in the prison, verse 22, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. In other words, there was a warden. There was a keeper of the prison as well who was under Potiphar. But we're told here in chapter 40 that Potiphar must have bypassed the keeper of the prison or instructed the keeper of the prison that I want Joseph to be the one who watches over these two. I want him to be the one who serves them. He must have proved a servant's heart to him to be willing to do that. And so at age 30, he interprets the dreams of Pharaoh. I think that's pretty cool, okay? Because again, it's an indicator of, I believe, Joseph's testimony, okay, in the midst of this situation. And that Joseph, when he got in prison, even when he was falsely accused and he was thrown into the dungeon, as he said, still has desire to do what? To serve. And because of that, then, he's given great authority. In the Greek, coming from the concept of authority, exousia, and the concept of dunamis, the power that goes behind it, Jesus said, all authority has been what? Given unto me. Therefore, you go and make disciples. Okay? Well, we are supposed to be able to use, if you would, authority that is bestowed upon us to its fullness. Does that make sense? Joseph is doing that. But he understands that this authority isn't for his own benefit, but rather his authority has been given to him so he could what? More effectively serve others. In Galatians chapter 5, we're told that we've been given liberty. But we haven't been given the liberty to, as an occasion for our own flesh, but rather we've been given the liberty so that we can do what? Serve one another. Christ has given us authority. Think about it. I mean, I am in a position like Joseph, okay? But God has given me that authority, not to gloat it over the other prisoners, if you would, but rather to serve the other prisoners. And so Joseph's position of authority actually became a position of service. Does that make sense? Okay? Now, as we consider then this, I want you to think about, with this age of Joseph, how long he's undergoing this trial. I mean, for some of us, 10 minutes is long enough. We might extend it to 13 minutes. But 10 years? 13 years? He was a teenager. Some of you younger people, put yourself there. He was a teenager. In that time when young people, and I don't want to be, you know, I was there, okay? I understand those days. When you are bucking against everything, and you're your own person, and we talked about that a little bit with Joseph potentially, and yet he's thrown into slavery, and then from slavery he's falsely accused and thrown into prison. I don't know how long he was in Potiphar's house, and I don't know how long he was in the prison. I would venture to say that based upon the fact that there were still two more years that he was in prison, that he potentially was in prison a year or two prior to that. So he was probably down in that dungeon for a couple years. Not a pleasant situation, especially when you've been falsely accused. Especially when you did the right thing and you got slammed for it anyway. What do we do when God allows us to be slammed for the wrong thing? Again, I share that testimony of Fanny Crosby. You know, the age 6 weeks, she's blinded. You know, I was talking to the kids afterwards. I don't know if she probably had any recollection at all of sight. She might. 6 weeks, I mean, it's hard to say. But she gives God the glory, gave God the glory for her blindness, knowing that if she had sight, she would be distracted by the things of the world, and she probably couldn't have been used as the vessel that she was by God. Joseph is willing to allow himself to be used as a vessel of God. How do I know that? Well, because we're going to go on from the incarcerations to the interpretations. And in the interpretations of this, we have the butler and then we're going to have the baker. But when they have these dreams and they share why they're so perplexed to Joseph, Joseph says what? Dreams belong to God. He hasn't lost his God focus. Does that make sense? He's still understanding God is in charge. God is so sovereign over the affairs of men. We say that with our mouths sometimes. And I've known some Calvinists, and I don't mean to be the Calvinist slammer, because you know there's the balance between election and free will and the foreknowledge and the predestination, so I'm not willing to go against either side. But I've known Calvinists who are very manipulative. And I think, do you not believe in the sovereignty of God? I mean, you say that with your mouth, you believe in the sovereignty of God, but then you manipulate the events of life like you don't think God can do anything. Here's Joseph. If anybody ought to seek to be a manipulator of his circumstances, you'd think Joseph might be it. But it's not. He's still recognizing the fact that God is in control over all things that are going on in his life. So what do we know about this? First of all, the dream of the butler. Well, he has that. The dream of the vine, the three vines and the grapes on it, and Joseph says, you're going to be restored in 3 days. The baker hears and he thinks, great, positive interpretations. Let me tell him mine. I was the same way. I had three baskets. There was dainties and goodies and breads and everything, and the birds came and they plucked it up and yada yada. And so Joseph says, your dream also has to do with 3 days. You know, the three baskets are 3 days, and the baker's probably thinking, yes, 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 but he says, but in 3 days, you're going to be hanged. The butler's going to be restored and put the cup back in, but you are going down with the ship. You're going to get blamed for the illness. Make sense? We're not saying that he was guilty. We're just saying that what? Pharaoh decided he was guilty. Pharaoh got sick. He decided it was from the food. And as it all boiled down, he decided you were the one who was the fall guy. Or literally, you're the guy who's going to take the blame for it. So, what does the butler find out? It happened exactly as Joseph said. Now, it's interesting, though, when I talk about the sovereignty of God and manipulation of man, that Joseph shows his humanity, doesn't it? Because what does Joseph say to the butler? But remember me when you put that cup back in Pharaoh's hand and mention me to Pharaoh, because I was sold as a slave, and even here I've done nothing. I've done nothing. Okay? So he still, if he can work his freedom, he's still trying to work it out. Okay? And so, but he's still going to be content to work through it. Well, we get to Pharaoh's court now. And Pharaoh has these dreams. Okay? So what's the situation? First of all, we have Pharaoh's dreams about the cows are fat and plump, and then the other cows come from the river, the gaunt ones, and they eat up the fat cows. But even after they've eaten up the fat cows, they look just as ugly as they did from the beginning. And then he wakes up, you know, probably pictures you do, probably startled, whatever, and you think, boy, that's a really weird dream. You know, must have been, again, something I ate. Man, I just brought that butler back on a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Wonder if he's doing something. Maybe the baker was the good guy. Anyways, and so he goes back and he dreams again, and this time he does what? He dreams about the grain. And he's got the plump grain, you know? But again, now comes the dry grain and the blighted grain, and it consumes the plump grain, and when it's done, it looks just as blighted as it did from the get-go. And so he wakes up again startled, and then the morning he wakes up and he realizes, and this is kind of an aside, he realizes that what? This was a special dream. How many of you dream almost every night? Some of you don't. Wow, this is something. Okay. Anyways, you probably all do. You just don't remember them, okay? And that's the whole point, okay? I mean, we dream almost every night. In fact, I think that we probably dream every night. We just don't remember them. Or you remember a little inkling of something, but you don't remember the whole thing. But have you ever had a dream and you woke up from it and you thought, wow, that's really weird. And then you went back to bed and you woke up the next morning and you still remembered it? I have. I've had dreams that I really believe, and I'm not saying I'm Joseph or the butler or the baker or whatever, but that I think God gave me dreams, you know? Whether he was telling me something, whether he was encouraging me, whether he was rebuking me. I've been rebuked in my dreams, you know? I've been encouraged in my dreams, okay? And I think God is able to clearly work within my subconscious life to bring. I think Satan as well, you know, sometimes my trash and my flesh and my past comes out in those things too, and I go, I hate it. But also, I think God allows that, because when I wake up, I'm clinging to God even more and asking Him to forgive me for the trash that I've allowed into my brain that comes out in these moments, you know, of cleansing and purity, purification. So, but there's something that tells us that this dream is special. I think Pharaoh probably had lots of dreams during his life. But this one was somehow special. He knew it. Think of Nebuchadnezzar, same way, right? But God allowed Pharaoh to know that this was a special dream. And the first thing that Pharaoh did was what Pharaohs would normally do. He would do what? Consult all of his wise men. Yeah, he'd bring together all of his magicians and wise men and sorcerers and everything, and they bring them together and he tells them. I mean, they got an easier job. I mean, do you remember when Nebuchadnezzar brought together his wise men? He told them, I'm not going to tell you the dream. You got to tell me the dream and the interpretation. At least these guys have it good. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar's wise men said, maybe this is the difference between Egyptian wise men and Babylonian wise men, I don't know. But the Babylonian wise men said, tell us the dream and we can give you the interpretation. And Nebuchadnezzar realizes, what? Whether you can or can't, you're going to tell me something. I think you're lying. And so tell me the dream. That'll really prove that you really know what you're doing, right? And they said, we can't do that. You know, it's never been asked before. Well, Pharaoh gives his wise men the dreams. And interestingly enough, the wise men admit that what? They don't know. They don't know. It's, again, in the days of Babylon, when Belshazzar, because Daniel was Belteshazzar, when Belshazzar was the king, and you had the handwriting on the wall, and all the wise men were brought together, and they couldn't read it. They couldn't interpret the writings on the wall, so they brought Daniel in, because Daniel had the spirit of the gods in him. We see a very strong similarity between Daniel and Joseph here, okay? And so Joseph is brought into Pharaoh, well, not just any old way, but we see in this situation, it's not just Pharaoh's dreams, but now we see the butler's what? Recall, his memory. Oops. You know, I am reminded today of my faults. He knew. I wonder how many times he had remembered Joseph. But put yourself in the butler's point of view. The first thing you need to understand is the relationship between Egyptians and Hebrews. They didn't like him. Hebrews, the term Hebrew was a term for migratory people. Okay, they lived in tents and they dwelt. Okay, and the Egyptians were the more sophisticated class. They had become a strong empire nation, and so they dwelt in homes, and they were building things like pyramids and that kind of stuff. And so they were the civilization of the day. And so when they looked at the Hebrews, they were like just the lower class, dirty people. Well, you're the butler, and not only do you know about this Hebrew, but he's a Hebrew slave who was thrown into the dungeon. And you're going to talk to Pharaoh about him? When you just got reinstated? I don't know about you, but I place myself in a butler's point of view sometimes. That's a hard sell. Gee, Pharaoh, by the way, big guy, I appreciate you letting me back here, but, I met this Hebrew slave who was thrown in prison while I was there, and he's a really great guy. He interpreted our dreams for us and then tell Pharaoh what the dreams were. I'm sure he's still feeling like he's a little bit on what? Shaky ground. That's exactly where I was going. Yeah. And so why is he going to bring this up to Pharaoh? Well, all of a sudden Pharaoh has this dream. Nobody else is able to interpret it. Enter the prime moment for the butler to remember. Yeah, sorry, redeem himself. To recall the moment when he met this Hebrew slave in prison when he and the baker had had the dreams. And so he said, I'm reminded of my faults. While I was in prison, remember, Pharaoh, what happened a couple years ago? You sent me and the baker in there. And while we were in there, we each had a dream on one night. And there was a Hebrew slave who was there who was able to interpret both of our dreams exactly how they came out. You restored me to my position and he hanged. Now, I always think this is kind of neat too. And he hanged the baker. He restored me and he hanged the baker. Like it was Joseph's doing, it was Joseph's interpretation. And so therefore, since Joseph interpreted it that way, that's the way it happened. And so Pharaoh says immediately what? Get that guy. Bring him here. And so we go into the interpretation now. And with this interpretation, we see Joseph summons the Pharaoh. Now, what do you notice when Joseph is brought to Pharaoh?
They have to clean him up.
They clean him up. Why do they clean him up? Because he goes to see Pharaoh, and he's all dirty. And again, it's bad enough that this Hebrew is coming before him. He just doesn't have to what? Look like one. Get it? So they shave him up, they wash him up. Now, can I just do a little aside here? Okay? Can I ride the hobby horse for a moment? Okay? You have got to know your audience. I try to tell my guys, and I try to tell the teens, the victors this a lot of times when I'm teaching them and stuff like that. But you walk into a construction site, and you see five guys talking. Four guys are in jeans and a t-shirt, and one guy's in khakis and a polo shirt. Who's the boss? Khakis and a polo shirt, okay? Now, that's easy because you're on a construction site. But let's say now you're in an office place, okay? And you walk into the office place, and you walk in, and there's a bunch of guys in khakis and a polo shirt, and one guy's got, dress pants, a button down, and a tie on. Who's the boss? Yeah, he's got the jeans in. Nowadays, it's starting to be true. But the reality is, you and I both know that the one you expect to be in charge is the one who's what? He's dressed like it. He's prepared for it. It's not a matter of the dress. He's prepared for the moment. When you go into a church, okay, and this is not to slam anybody and everybody, okay? When you go in, and let's say you walk in, and you see a bunch of people either in jeans and t-shirts or khakis and a polo shirt, and you see one guy who's got on a tie and maybe a suit coat. Who's the pastor? Okay? The tie and the suit coat. Exactly right. Listen, you are, whether it should be or not, I understand we shouldn't judge people based upon their outward book, and so we should live like that, okay? And I understand when I start to do that, and I start to go, because of the way people look, it's sin against me, okay? I'm being a respecter of persons. However, I'm also supposed to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove, and I need to understand that the world does judge me based upon my appearance. And if I want to have an audience amongst people, I need to understand that they are going to accept me based upon it. I can, again, Galatians 5, I mentioned my Christian liberty a little bit ago. I can say, but I have Christian liberty, and I don't have to bow down to anybody because of all this stuff. But my liberty is given to me so I can serve other people. So I can serve God, actually, ultimately, in serving other people. So I can be a proper minister of the gospel of God in the kingdom of God amongst other people. He called me to be an ambassador of reconciliation. So when I go out, I should seek to be in my appearance in a manner that is acceptable to other people. I've had a beard different times and I've shaved it off. If I feel like the beard becomes a stumbling block to my opportunity to talk to people, I'll shave off my beard. Does that make sense? Because the beard is meaningless to me. I'll keep my mustache. Anyways, I'm glad I'm not in a culture where the mustache is bad. But Joseph was. So the first thing that happened with Joseph was he got shaved and he got washed and they got redressed so that when he went before Pharaoh, there was no stumbling block for Joseph. Could you imagine if Joseph said, listen, I don't care. That stinking Pharaoh, he's in charge of the Egyptians. I'm not an Egyptian. Look at what the Egyptians done to me. They bought me as a slave. They threw me into prison. And now you want me to worry about how I'm going to appear before Pharaoh? I'm just going to get thrown back down here anyway. Pharaoh wants to talk to me. He can talk to me as I am. How many people have you heard talk about that going to church? They're going to go before God just as they are. Isn't it amazing that if President Obama came down and you were invited to a special dinner, that people would shave, quote unquote, wash and change clothes to be dressed appropriately to meet the head of state? But we don't understand the concept of getting before God. I'm not saying we got to put on a facade, and I don't want to become pharisaical, and I don't want to become, you know, the hypocrite where we are clean on the outside, but inside we're full of dead men's bones. That's not the point. The point is, there is the concept of being aware of who you're coming before. In the same light, when I go before God in prayer, I need to understand not getting dressed up on the outside, but understanding my clothing on the inside. Am I clothed in His righteousness? Or am I clothing myself in my own righteousness? Am I seeking to become clean in front of Him? Shaved? Washed? My clothes being changed? I can't clean myself, but what? He can cleanse me. But after I've had that, the fact is, even still in my life, I what? I sin. My whiskers grow. Dirt clings to me. My outfit becomes soiled. And one of the very first things I should do when I go before God in prayer is to confess and repent. And to seek to be cleansed before I stand before the Pharaoh of the entire universe, if you would. Does that make sense? So, let me get off my hobby horse for a moment. Joseph was summoned to see Pharaoh. Pharaoh was the most powerful man in the entire world. Amazing. He's a slave from the dungeon. This is a guy on death row being invited to the White House. Well, we see as he comes then before Pharaoh and his appearance before Pharaoh, that Pharaoh gives him a summary of the dreams. He summarizes and, you know, kind of goes into details and tells him what happened. And then Joseph comes back and he tells him the meaning of the dreams. But note when he tells him the meaning of the dreams here, excuse me, verse 25, chapter 41, Joseph says to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do." God has shown. Now, what had he previously told Pharaoh when Pharaoh said to him, "I heard it said that you can interpret dreams"? How did he respond to him? Verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace," a peaceful answer, something that will bring you some peace to your turbulence because of these dreams. Joseph continually is pointing everybody back to God. Even to the most powerful man in the world. If you had the opportunity to have an audience with President Obama, would pointing him to God be one of your chief motivations? Or would it be talking about the Health Care Act or the desire to have limitations put upon gun ownership? Would it be, if you're a homeschooler, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child that limit then the ability of people to homeschool? Are there social issues that you're worried about dealing with the government on? Or would it be, I want to point this guy to God. I want him to understand that I'm nothing special. It's not my abilities. It's not my talents. But rather, God is using me. I'm just the vessel. I'm just the host vessel. I kind of chuckled about that in Sunday school about the old Donald Southern, it was Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I think, right? Is that what it was? Yeah. And, you know, how they were just looking for host bodies. Well, you know, and I don't want to make God an alien, but it's the same concept. God is looking for a few good servants. In fact, Jesus says that God is looking for true worshipers to worship Him. You know, I mean, God is actively seeking believers who will actually what? Trust Him and serve Him. To actually go out and do it and point it back to Him. Do you remember what Jesus said in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount? That about you are you are the light of the world, a city that is set upon a hill whose light cannot be hid, that others may see your what? Good works and what? Glorify your Father in heaven. Which means that while you're doing your good works, you must be what? Pointing people back to Him. Yeah, that's right, glorifying Him. And that you're not taking credit for Himself. So he tells Pharaoh, you know, we can go into all that, but basically he tells Pharaoh, and we've read it, you know, that here's what the dreams mean. You know, God has given you knowledge of what's coming in the future. There's going to be 7 good years, and then there's going to be 7 bad years. And then he gives him this recommendation. I mean, what an act of boldness, you know? And he says, so now, Pharaoh, here's what you need to do. You need to find somebody who has great wisdom and great discernment that you can set over all the affairs of Egypt, who can, during those 7 years, collect up some of the foods so that during the 7 bad years, you have food for everybody to eat. Again, we read it and we think, oh, this is Joseph. This is really kind of cool. But please, again, put yourself in Joseph's point of view. He is a Hebrew slave who had been incarcerated, who was grabbed from the dungeon, and now has a moment after, what, 10 to 13 years? And he's standing before Pharaoh, and he's going to have the audacity now to tell Pharaoh what to do. What was he asked to do? Interpret the dream. He wasn't asked to give advice. He's not part of his cabinet. He's not an advisor to Pharaoh. And yet, he willingly offers up godly advice. Phyllis?
I'm thinking Joseph as a born leader, and if no born leaders, they cannot not tell you.
Yeah. You're right. You're probably right. Born leader, he can't help but not say what you should do. I mean, what do you have to lose? So he tells Pharaoh, and this is what you need to do. I think about it from the perspective that whatever the motivations are, but he gives him the godly what? The godly advice. Not knowing whether Pharaoh was going to be what? Receptive or repulsive to it. Every time we open up our mouth, we should be seeking to give good news of the king. Advice from the kingdom. And you know what? The pharaohs that you talk to, because everybody's a pharaoh in their own mind, right? They're either going to be receptive or repulsive to what you have to say. I'm not responsible for that. Does it make sense? I'm merely responsible for, quote-unquote, interpreting the dream and giving the advice. I'm merely responsible, as Jesus said, don't worry about what you're going to say in that day, because the words will be what? In your mouth. They'll be given to you, they'll be put in your mouth. All I have to do is open my mouth and let them come out. Does that make sense? But too many of us, and I'm putting us, I'm not saying too many of you, I'm saying too many of us, which means I've placed myself in that grouping, close our mouths out of fear. And Jesus said, don't fear what others can do to you. Rather fear God. And so Joseph, in his appearance then, gives him the recommendation. And we see that Pharaoh does what? He accepts it. And he promotes Joseph. And really kind of exciting that in it, Pharaoh, like Potiphar, like the jailkeeper, recognized what about Joseph? He's got great wisdom. The wisdom of God is in him. There is something different about this guy than everybody else. And for a man of his age, think about it. When he went to Potiphar, again, he was somewhere between 17 and 20. So he was a young man in his young 20s, if he was even 20 yet, and he was given to be the in charge over the house of Potiphar. And then he was still in his mid-20s to later mid-20s when he was thrown in prison. And he was given in charge over that. So again, whether he was that born leader and he was just that, still, you can have, you know, this is what I work with the guys on so much, you can have leadership tendencies, but one of the greatest leaders of our days, if you would, was Adolf Hitler. And when I say that, most people look at me and they cringe and go, what do you mean? I said, I didn't say he was a good man. I said he was a great leader. He got masses of people to do things that they wouldn't have done. But he got them to do things for evil, not for good. You can be a leader, but not be a godly leader. What this world needs is some godly leaders. Joseph was that godly leader. He was that moral influence, leading people to righteousness. And I think that that's what each of these unsaved Gentile people noted in him. And so Pharaoh notes in him the wisdom of God, verses 37 to 39. And then we see this pronouncement then of Pharaoh, where Pharaoh then announces it and says, beginning of verse 40, he says, you shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. Can you imagine this? 5 minutes ago, who were you? You were a cleaned up Hebrew slave that had been thrown into prison. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're expecting to hear off with his head, or, all right, I'm done with you now, back into prison. You know, whatever. And you hear, wow, there is none such as wise as you. So who should this person be? Well, it's clearly should be you. So now you Hebrew slave, are going to be over the entire nation of Egypt. Now, hear what he says. Only in light of the throne am I above you. Do you get it? I mean, basically what he said is, your power is unequaled in all of... The only difference thing is, you can't ascend to the throne. You're not Pharaoh. Your kids won't be the next Pharaohs. My kids will be the next Pharaoh. But as far as being the one who's in charge of the land, you're it. You are the man. You've got all the power. And so he goes on, and he gives him this the ride, verse 43... And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him and bowed the knee. So he set him over the land of Egypt. Again, just an amazing thing. I think of Haman with Mordecai as he's being led throughout the city. You know, I can't imagine the people who had to lead this Hebrew guy throughout the city, telling him to bow the knee to this dirty Hebrew guy. And they would normally kill him. Verse 45, and then Pharaoh blesses him and says, I'm going to give you a wife. Clearly you need to have a wife, you know? So I'm going to give you a wife. And so who does he give him as a wife? A false God's priest's daughter. Potiphar. 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 Well, Potiphar, right, is that's exactly right. Is actually a name to the god. So, for example, like you have Belshazzar. Okay, I don't know what Shazar is in my brain, but Bel was the god in Babylon, and so Belshazzar, Belteshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar, Nebo was the god, and so a lot of the times the foreign people would give names toward their gods. That sounds like, wow, that's really kind of interesting. But you know what? So do we. No, it was not Potiphar. It was somebody different. And so, but we do the same thing. Gabriel, God is my strength, you know. And so we have names that are based upon other words. And so, so anyway, so he gives them this bride. And take this for what it's worth here, but Joseph doesn't reject the gift. He accepts this bride. And now he's expected to do what? Lead her. Lead her in righteousness. You know? And it's just an amazing thing, you know? I mean, from Joseph are going to come two of the tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. That's right. And so Joseph's got this huge task. He's got not just a woman, not just a pagan woman, but he has the daughter of one of the priests of this false religion. You know? Does anybody know who Anton LaVey is? He is the chief priest of the Satanists. Okay? Anton LaVey, he lives out in California. And, you know, they have the Satanic Bible and all this kind of stuff. It'd be like someone, you know, Anton LaVey being told to give his daughter to Billy Graham's son or something, you know? I mean, does it kind of give an idea here? I mean, you know, you got a true servant of Yahweh, and he's given just this pagan, a Wiccan girl or whatever as the bride. But he does it. And the most exciting thing here, I'm sure, for Joseph, wasn't just the power thing, but we're told then, at the very end, that when he puts him on this chariot and he sends him out, verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, I'm extracting a little bit of a thing here, but his freedom. Joseph, for almost half of his life now, has been in bondage. Assuming he was 17 to 20 years old. A third to a half of his life has been spent in bondage. The last 2 to 4 years was spent where? Not just prison, but what did he call it? The dungeon. And so, I mean, now all of a sudden, he has what? Freedom. Freedom to do whatever he what? Chooses to do, because along with his freedom, he was given what? Power, authority, a car. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and not only, oh, he was given a chauffeur too, but anyways. And so, but that's exactly right. You know, when we put that, bring it, and you know, embellish it as all you can. Bring it, because understand that now the true tests that's going to come Joseph's way. And understand what God was doing in his life for the past 10 to 13 years. He was placing him through all kind of trials and tests so that he would be prepared to withstand the greatest temptations. The greatest temptations are not when we are bound by law. The greatest temptations are when we're free to do what we want to do. When no one is there to tell us no. Joseph is going to have those greatest temptations, I'm sure, coming before him. We don't read about them. We just read past them. But I'm sure that they were there. There is no temptation that's overtaken me or Joseph, but such as what? Common to man. I'm sure Joseph, like any other man, is now going to face this battle with the power. So, do you believe that God is sovereign over the affairs of men? And that includes yours. How do you respond when you're placed in a less than desirable situation? Do you continue to serve the Lord? Or do you quit? Who gets the glory for your abilities and talents? Well, we're told that one who is faithful in what is least is going to be faithful also in much. And therefore, if we're not faithful in the unrighteous mammon or the small things, the things of the world, who's going to commit to our trust true riches? Who's saying it? Jesus. Jesus is basically telling us, if we are unfaithful to use the things of the world, why will He entrust to us eternal things? We are called to be faithful servants in all the trials and temptations that we go through. You can't serve God and the things of the world. Have you been faithful in what is least? Or do you need to recommit yourself to the proper master? Let's pray. Father, I thank You for Your goodness to us. You are a good and gracious master. Lord, I pray that You would help us to be faithful in the midst of the trials of life, not turning and looking to ourselves, looking to You. Lord, help us to give You the glory and the honor that You rightly deserve. Lord, I thank You for the testimony of Joseph. Lord, I pray that we would be, even in a small way, as faithful, and that we would give You glory. In Jesus' name, amen.